It's time to turn to the WUKY Sports page with your host, Keith Elkins, revealing conversations and stories you thought you knew from prominent Kentucky sports figures. Now, here once again is Keith Elkins.
Julian Tackett is with us today. He's the commissioner of the Kentucky High School Athletic Association, now in his 13th year in that role and 39 years overall with the KHSAA, and he has seen athletics from just about every perspective over that time, and we'll talk with him about that today. Julian, first of all, it's good to have you with us.
Thanks a lot, Keith. Always glad to be here.
Well, we're recording in the middle of December, so let's ask you about the middle of December for the KHSAA commissioner. Is this maybe a slight break for you?
Well, it's a little bit downhill, finally. The weekend just passed, we did our cheer and dance championships with about 7,000 people coming through George Rogers Clark High School to watch those activities. And then this weekend, actually tomorrow, will be our eSports championship for the winter. And that actually will conclude this first 6 months of 22-23. And it's a wild ride coming off of all the other sports and, you know, soccer and volleyball and cross country and field hockey and then football and then the cheer and dance. It kind of piles up on you after a while, but you get used to it. It keeps time moving fast.
Yeah, it goes in that same rhythm each year. At least you know most of the time anyway when a slight break is coming, and you also know when the crush is coming. So I guess you learn to anticipate and deal with those things from year to year, don't you?
Well, you have to. And, you know, we started about 6 weeks ago planning for the basketball tournament. So at the same time, you're kind of exercising the fall and getting things done. If you're not working ahead, you're going to be behind. So it's something you get used to, the seasons. It's so different. You know, I've got a lot of friends in college athletics, and a lot of times they're able to focus on one sport per season, and it kind of has ebbs and flows. And this particular operation, there simply are no real downtimes, a little bit of time around the dead period and maybe the week between Christmas and New Year, assuming the students that go out of state to play and coaches remember how to act and you don't have to deal with those situations. But it's rather constant, but it does make the time go by very quickly.
Well, we just finished up another round of football playoffs and had the state championship games at Kroger Field here a couple of weekends ago. From the commissioner's standpoint, how did that go for you?
Well, you know, we're blessed to be able – we meet with our peer states all the time, and so many of them are not blessed with the relationship that we have right now with the University of Kentucky and their facilities for our kids to get that experience. Even if that student athlete never left the sidelines but was there on that same field that their hero team plays on, or maybe another team in the conference that came in to play there, is just an experience. It's part of the student experience, and we are so blessed to be able to have a lot of facilities for a lot of our events that are so good. And the relationship with the university right now with Coach Barnhart and his staff is just phenomenal. And those kids getting that experience is big. And, you know, certainly for us being able to play in the central part of the state with an all-weather surface that we can kind of not worry so much about if it rains or if it snows as we used to in different venues. It's just different. It lets us focus on the student experience and the fan experience. And so from our standpoint, from my standpoint, and I'm a little more directly involved in football than I am some of the other things now, but it could not go much smoother. Great followings, great crowds, great games. A change we made in our bracketing 3 or 4 years ago is really showing out to where the best games are at the end, and that's helping very much. So we think it was a very good fall. That just was kind of the icing on the cake, and then we immediately started with the winter championships with cheer and dance.
Mm-hmm. You've had, of course, an interest in sports all your life. Most of us start by thinking we're going to be successful on the field, and we enjoy playing as we're growing up, but what was your story?
Well, you know, I dabbled in a little bit of everything at Bryan Station, whether it was clubs or sports. I played just about everything you could. I was a year and a half, almost 2 years younger than most of my classmates, and I kind of wish I would have been one of those that I deal with now, all these parents want to hold kids back. I kind of wish I'd have had another year. And I thought I was going to be all world. I was pretty good at a couple. I was actually very good at a couple sports, but not outstanding at any one. And I'll never forget when Coach Lane at Transy sat down in the living room with my mother and I, and he said, you know, you probably could walk on, you're still physically developing, you could go someplace and make a name for yourself, or you could come here and go to Transy, try to play a little bit, but at the same time start meeting your network of people that will become your professional career. Mm-hmm. And I've always remembered that question when Coach Lane asked. I came down to a decision between the University of Missouri and Transy, and he convinced me. And I didn't play there long. You know, I tried to walk on and tried to do a little play, and it was apparent that I probably had a better opportunity being involved with the team. Interesting, with the death of Coach Mike Leach, I was reading something that I think a lot of people have seen now about how Lincoln Riley first got involved in coaching. And, you know, Leach called him in and said that really there's not going to be an opportunity for you to play. I'd really like you to be a student coach and kind of learn how to do things. Lincoln Riley storms out of the room, comes back the next morning and accepts the job. And, of course, you know what's happened. Mm-hmm. He's now coaching a Division I Power 5 team. So that's kind of, you know, I've not made that level, not tried for that level. But I think getting involved with Transy and Coach Lane and Coach Whitson were fairly young in their coaching career there. And they gave me some opportunities. They kind of gave me a lot of rope. I became friends with Russell Rice, who gave me a lot of tips and tricks to do to try to get a little small school some attention. I remember the joke that Coach Whitson made one time is he said when they were first talking to me about potentially walking on, I had a 3-phone book vertical jump. And when I decided that playing probably wasn't it, I still had a 3-phone book vertical jump. But when I started, it was New York City. And when I finished, it was Cynthiana, Kentucky. You know, so we were making the transition from Division III to II, and it was obvious bigger players were going to be needed. And I came in with a great bunch of freshmen. Basketball players ended up being my lifelong best friends and could not have had any better experience. And then lo and behold, my freshman year, sitting in the dorm during spring break, because I was one of the kids that did not have the resources to go to Florida, et cetera. And Coach Lane came in. It was on a Wednesday afternoon, and he said they've moved the state tournament here this year. This was 79. This was the Lafayette year. He said they moved the state tournament here, and nobody communicated with the stats crew. Do you think you and Kenny, my buddy Kenny Bourne, do you think the two of you would like to go down and take care of it? And there became my first entree to the KHSAA was just working the Sweet 16 and just fell in love with it. I liked the level, had opportunities to move to a collegiate level in several spots, but this is the level that was it for me. And I think that, you know, right place, right time, ended up meeting through recruiting. I met a kid named Kip Hagan, who was Cliff's son, and was talking to him. We were dating girls that were buddies. And through that, met Mr. Hagan, who ended up hiring me in a part-time role to help Coach Claiborne with some computer stuff they were doing, trying to do scouting and tendency analysis now that it's so, you know, scientific. Back then, it was pretty rudimentary. But, you know, I've just been lucky all along the way. But that built on to what it is today. And I've always been concerned with making the student experience the best. And if adults are happy, that's fine. But if adults are unhappy, there's probably not one thing I could do about it anyway. So let's just try to focus on the student experience.
Yeah. Now, when you go back to that conversation with Coach Lane, as you said, I mean, the thing at Transy was not your only opportunity. I mean, you did have a chance to play. It was football, right, at Missouri.
Yep.
And so you were excelling at a level that most of us didn't see. So your dream in continuing to play could have gone on a little further, but yeah, it takes a little maturity to decide maybe to go the other way at that
point.
Well,
and I was so – I mean, I was born with two things that you really are going to fight when you're trying to play in a major college anyway, and that was two bad knees. And I'd had a bad experience. I didn't even get to play a whole lot when I was in high school, but I was really mature, and I went from a 5'11", 250-pound fat kid to a 6'3", 250-pound fat kid. So all of a sudden, people give you a little interest. They say, come on out and try. Missouri obviously wasn't at the level they are now. My gosh, they're fantastic as far as an opportunity. But I think the biggest thing, the takeaway for me, was little about sports and more about Coach Lane's emphasis on the people that are affiliated with Transy, the people that graduate from here. They're your network. That's probably where you're going to meet somebody you're going to work with. That's probably your lawyer, your doctor, your dentist. I mean, he really was wise beyond his years, and I really – his influence in my life, he and Coach Whitson were tremendous influences for a kid that graduated at barely 17 from high school and thought he knew everything. They were just great influences and role models for me, and remained, you know, Coach Lane remains a friend today, and Lord knows we lost Coach Whitson way too early. Mm-hmm. But it was you have to – I think people – that's one thing I see now is a lot of people really miss on their own estimation of their own ability. I'd like to think that I wasn't a real smart guy, but I was smart enough to realize that Sundays weren't in the opportunity, and probably Saturday afternoons weren't going to be much anyway, and that – it just kept ringing in my ear, you need to start meeting the people. And now I think about all the people I deal with every day that, you know, whether they're members of the legislature, whether they're members of state government, whether they're lawyers, doctors, they all have a lot of transient center connections. Those two schools are so interrelated. And then I've got did my graduate work at UK with an MBA over there, so I kind of got to see both sides. Mm-hmm. And I've just been very blessed and very lucky along the way, and just, you know, a combination of the right breaks and a little bit of workaholism has kind of helped me.
Yeah, and you mentioned the name Russell Rice, too, who was the longtime sports information director at UK and was something of a pioneer in sports information, because that position was just beginning to evolve when Russell took that position at UK. So he opened some doors, I guess, too, huh?
He did, and I actually communicated with him pretty regular. When I was in school, my first introduction to him, they were having a call-in show, and I think it was Kay Woods through the week, but I'm not sure. But Russell was his guest, and I actually called in one night, and I said, you know, I'm with a small college, I'm trying to get, what would you do to promote, et cetera. And Russell, even then, was wise enough to say, you know, at a place as big as we are, we are cutting out people because we have so many people that want to come in and promote us. You have to be just the opposite. You have to go get them because you're not going to be their highest priority. So I had a chance to get to know Russ. I got to know Tom Hammond, who was still doing our TV broadcast, and LAX here in town was doing some of that, and really just leaned on him. And then when I got out of school, my first job was working at the UK Ag College, but Mr. Hagen called, and they had hired this guy from Maryland who, as football coach, who wanted some data analysis done that a guy had written for him up there. And so I got involved there. Well, lo and behold, the office I was working with and in was right next to Russ's office in the stadium. And so he got me involved in their game stats crew, and we kind of wrote a little thing that helped compile the stats. And he really kind of let me in on the inner circle. He also taught me something. He had an expression that he used a lot with staff, and it was real short and sweet. He just said, loose lips sink ships. And he always reminded people that, number one, a reporter's never off the record, and number two, that you're going to know things that you have to look at people straight in the eye and say, I don't know. And I have to say that has been something that really framed a lot of the things that I've ended up doing later on in life, is that there's not always a need to know every single detail. Our level is a little bit more of a struggle because we're dealing with protected records of kids under 18. So where Russ is out promoting his 19-year-olds, we can't do that. And so, but it was really good. I still remember the days that he got me involved. At one time, I was doing in-house, what they called in-house PA at the football games, where you were reporting from the stats crew to all the reporters what they had and what the ruling was, et cetera. So we asked him one day, it was really rainy, and asked him one day what the crowd was, and he leans over top of me, kind of looks up in the audience, and said, 50,104. And I, you know, so we've always teased about the Russell Rice attendance method, you know, count the legs and divide by seven or something. I mean, we made up some number, but he was such an influence. And my gosh, when I was traveling, getting to travel with the team, I was doing some video work for Coach Redding, who worked for Coach Claiborne, and we would take the tapes back, and Russ would always, when you're done with them, I want them, because he would grab a clip off here and there. He was so far ahead of his time. Mm-hmm. And then hired Brad and some others that kept us involved. And it was I've just been very lucky by staying here. I can't imagine, I'm sure there would have been opportunities in Columbia, Missouri, or somewhere else, but at the same time, I can't imagine things playing out like they did if those conversations early on hadn't happened.
Well, I want to ask you a lot about your KHSAA work, but one question about your UK days. Jerry Claiborne making the inquiry into getting what would amount to analytics, I guess, in those days. And we think of Jerry Claiborne as an old school guy, but Jerry Claiborne, I think I remember right, was a math major and was an outstanding student at UK. So sometimes the book and the cover don't match, do they?
Let me tell you, when I first sit down with him, I had a meeting with him, and he showed me the printouts on the huge ledger-sized paper that was continuous form. He showed me what they got at Maryland. And he said, I'm concerned with tendencies. And it's not yes, it's analytics, but, you know, he said, if they're doing the same thing on third down and short, I want to know that, so I do something different. Are they doing that? And it was really educational for me, because I kind of understood the game, but I didn't really know it inside. And working with Coach Farrell Sheridan and Coach Dave Likens were two primary contacts. And we had to, you know, the film would come in on Saturday night. They would spend Sunday breaking it down. I'd get it Sunday night. Overnight, we're typing it and getting them the report. And the next thing you know, the next morning, they got the report. But he was actually – now, this is 84. Think of how ahead of its time it really was. He also was one that came and he said, I don't want you to tell the whole staff you're doing this, but I want you to break down us because we want to be sure we're not giving away tendencies. Mm-hmm. And that was, I mean, that was brand new for back then to realize that to realize the analytics part was there, that you might be able to see that I'm predicting what I'm going to do. And so that was really a cool thing to be involved with. And we mimicked a lot of stuff he'd done, worked, you know, when he was gone, all the years he was here, and then all the way through, I think the next to last year with Coach Curry, they bought this fancy-dancy system that tied in with video, and I was still hanging around but not doing as much. But those guys, people just don't realize how much time those people put in this stuff, and every little bit helps. And they were really able to break themselves down as well as breaking the opponents down. And a lot of good times. I still keep in touch with some of those coaches that were on Coach Claiborne's staff. You know, he didn't turn over hardly anybody. And it was always fun.
Yeah, yeah. Now, the technology has carried over. That's been a good part of your career in helping with technological matters, whether it's for the KHSAA or back in your days at UK. It's something else, another piece of knowledge that you've been able to bring to the table. It has been important, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think it. And, of course, again, it's timing. It's not anything that I necessarily did. I had a math background, and I thought I was pretty smart till I started encountering some people that were smarter when I was in college. But as we looked at it, the one thing I always was looking for and still am today is efficiencies. I don't think we necessarily have to have the latest, greatest, but can we do what we're doing in less time? And the flaw to that is then you free up time that if you're doing what you should do, you fill in with something else. But we were always looking at that. I remember my advisor called me. Coach Whitson was my basic life advisor, I guess you could say, as he was for anybody with a basketball team. And Dr. Wright was my academic advisor. And they met and they said, you realize it's the end of your sophomore year and you haven't even declared a major. You've just been taking classes. And we looked down and I was closer to a computer science and math degree than anything. So they said, well, by default, let's do that. So, I mean, it was not really I've got to do this, I want to be this. I just got involved with it, and they put up with me over there and then decided after 4 years, I always say they had a committee meet and said, we're done with you, get out. but it did set a framework because you learn to understand. Transy did one thing for me as a small school that I really needed coming out of a big school, big high school, and that is taught me to think on my own because I didn't have a big group to lean on. You know, I wouldn't have fit probably in a big environment where 300 people are in a freshman chemistry class. But I did fit in over there a little bit academically. And so the data part was always a part of it. I got involved at that time, Brad Davis at UK, they were using a product out of Louisville for stats, and they asked me to kind of manage it. And we not only managed it, we helped rewrite it and do some things. And I can remember carrying those dang computer monitors to the SEC tournament every year and all this other stuff. And now they've got it so much easier because they've got it all on the network and on the internet. But just got lucky. I mean, had a lot of really good opportunities. And one thing I would say to anybody is don't shy away because it's not in your current wheelhouse. Your wheelhouse needs to change. You know, and I've really found that out with my organization I work with now, because any organization that doesn't evolve becomes extinct. And I know a lot of people try to hold on to yesterday, but at the same time, if you don't evolve, it's going to be a problem. And that's personal, too.
Yeah, and it's obvious that's been a pattern in your life because you've taken on these things, taken on the duties at Transy, taken on the computer science major. So it's something that you, as you say, you don't shy away from. You were willing to take it on and had enough confidence to do it, and also had the support of this network that you've talked about.
And I think you end up with there's a fine line between confidence and arrogance, and I hope I haven't ever stepped across that. But I think you've got to be willing to take on new challenges. And I just can't imagine, you know, that's why the thought of retirement here in a few years just kind of is a little bit daunting, because I talk to people that are retired and they say, you know, I don't know how I had time to work. And then I talk to other people that are they don't have an it in their day. And I'm still trying to sort that out as I talk to people. I still think we're very productive. I still think, you know, my wife's a great supporter and we do a lot of things together for that reason. But I think in general, if you limit yourself to what you're currently doing, you'll always be limited to what you're currently doing. So I think being willing to try something and being willing to fail is a key part of growth, both professionally and personally. Mm-hmm.
Tell me about the transition then to the KHSAA, your start, your career there, and then eventually the position of commissioner.
Well, you know, when I was – I told you about meeting some people when I was in college. One of the other people that I rode with Coach Whitson to try to recruit a couple times was a young man named David Mills. And David was a basketball player at Frankfort. His dad was Tom Mills, who was a former commissioner. And I talked David into playing softball with a group we were playing. We were playing a little A&O open softball and playing all over the place. And he was a slick fielder. He was pretty dang good. And we were sitting getting ready for a game one night, and he said, Dad said to ask you something. He said, they've created this position over at the KHSAA, and they're calling it Sports Information Director. But it won't just be that. It'll also be they've got to try to automate some things. Dad wants to get ahead of the curve where he thinks they're lagging a little bit. So I happened to apply for it when I got the brochure, and I remember running screaming through the house the day that Tom called and said, we're going to offer you the job, because I knew a couple of the other finalists, and I knew they were great sports information exclusive candidates. And I said, I'd love to do it, and then got in there and got to working with Tom and Billy Wise and Lewis Stout and Bridget DeVries and the staff we had over there. And it was life-changing, and I realized very quickly. I had a couple of opportunities during that time when I was SID to move to the collegiate ranks, and there was something nagging at me that says you're where you need to be. And I don't know if I was afraid to take a risk or if I really did feel like it was the right mix. I tell people all the time that 405 has always been my zip code.
Yeah,
I've lived in a couple zip codes here, but only a couple. So I just couldn't see pulling away. I remember one time I was offered a job when our national office was in Kansas City. They were discussing a job with me, and it was in Kansas City. And I was supposed to make a decision the first part of March, and I made a mistake of going to the last UK home game. And because I was working the table, and they play my old Kentucky home, and they do all that stuff. And I said, I'm just not ready to go. Yeah. I'm just really not. So for all those people that have wanted me out of there for years, if they just hadn't played that song,
that's right.
You never know.
Things would have changed. Well, now, as you progressed in your career there at KHSAA, eventually the opportunity comes to take the top job. So you have the tendency to take things on, take on challenges. Was there any hesitation there?
There wasn't at that point. I mean, I changed jobs a couple of times. I remember in 1994, Billy Wise was named commissioner, and he and I went to dinner. And he sat down, and he knew I just had a new MBA, and I guess he thought that meant I knew everything about business. And he sat me down at dinner, and he said, here's the deal. He said, we've got $70,000 in the bank, and we owe $300,000 a year on this new building we've just built, and I need you to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And we retained a couple of outside finance consultants. We were in a really bad deal with the way we'd financed the building, got that redone. But that was, he created a position. He said, just name it. And I said, well, just business director. So that's what they named it, business affairs director. And so it was kind of an intermediate step. He wanted to hire another assistant commissioner, but the board didn't want to at that point. So he wedged me in there. And I had one job, which was to balance the budget, and the rest of the line was other duties as assigned. Mm-hmm. And that just continued to grow. It's a lifelong problem of mine, not being able to say no. And then after a few years of that and a few years as assistant, Bridget announced that she was retiring, and the board came to me and asked me if I'd be interested in applying, and I told them yes. And I think that, you know, if you feel like you're stale in a position, or if you feel like you've done what you can and now all you're doing is putting the widgets together and you're really not having any influence, I'm not sure this is a good business for you. And I didn't feel that way. I said, I've still got some ideas. I remember the board, the first meeting, they named me in April, and we come in the May meeting or maybe July, but came in and I said, well, they said, what's your mission right now? And I said, well, we're going to add 4 sport activities that we've never had. We were strictly a sports group. I said, we're going to add bowling, archery, and bass fishing. And we're going to add cheerleading, and the revenue off cheerleading is going to pay for the other 3. And they looked at me kind of cross-eyed, and I said, well, that seems to be what our membership wants, and here's the data. And they said, we'll give it a try. And that started a second wave of expansion that kind of closely mirrors what Tom was able to guide us through when we added the girls' sports in the 70s. We've had an unprecedented level of growth. It's not anything I did other than open the door. It's the schools and the kids and the families supporting them doing it. So now we're expanding, and we're liable to continue expanding. But at that particular point, I can't say when they came to me in the late winter and early spring of 2010 about the job that I thought, here's what I want to do, A, B, and C. It was, if just give me enough rope to hang by, and I'll see if we can get through. And we've been able to do some pretty good things.
The job, I would think, you really have to watch being bogged down by the many, many things that come to your desk first that probably shouldn't. I know you have a great staff, but at the same time, you've got to keep an eye on the future, and also you've got some big things right in front of you. What's that like to balance?
You know, I can remember Ralph Hacker and I talking one time about the radio business, and he said one of the real important people that he had that worked for him was what he called a traffic manager. And he said, it's not the guy that tells you if New Circle Road is crowded. It's the guy that tries to say, we got this, now move it over here. And that's a lot of what this job is. I get around 400 to 450 emails every day. Now, the majority of those, you know, a couple hundred of them, I'm forwarding to other people. Because I know that that's not their bailiwick. Whether it used to be that I ran baseball for years, I ran wrestling for years, I ran, you know, football, still involved in that. But the temptation, if you're not really careful, is I'll answer everything. Mm-hmm. But you have to empower the people around you. I don't care what job you're in. You have to empower them to feel comfortable. You've got to get them out of their comfort zone. If I forward you something and say, Keith, answer this, and you don't know, I've got to have trained you to where you know to come and tell me, help me out here. I won't have to come back to you on this one, but on this one I need some help. And that's what we've really tried to model there. It is really difficult with so many people charging at you. It's difficult to avoid the micromanagement problem because there comes a point you say, well, if they're going to blame me anyway, I might as well do it. That does not help the growth of any organization. At some point, you've got to give people an opportunity to succeed or fail. And you've got to be willing to do what's necessary. And that's the hardest part. I think the second thing that I always tell people hardest, and I will say this to whoever succeeds me, you're going to come into that job. I came into that job with a to-do list from when I was the senior associate. Still haven't touched that list. Still haven't touched it. Second thing I came in, I said, you know what? Finally, I'm going to be in control of my schedule. That is the biggest fallacy ever.
Yeah.
Because you're less in control, because now where before I could have an assistant, you know, maybe an administrative assistant, you know, shield calls for me, go through them. Now, if Representative so-and-so or Governor so-and-so or Senator so-and-so call, you better be dropping what you're doing. Plus, I've got an 18-member board of directors, not five like most school districts. I've got 18. And, you know, I've got, matter of fact, one call during this interview. And, you know, I'll go back in the car and have to respond to make sure I'm – and this is the hard part. I've got to empower them to be able to represent their people. But at the same time, I've got to make sure they're giving the right answers. So you learn a lot more about tact and diplomacy maybe than this old hard-headed boy from the north end of Lexington really thought he was going to have to know. Because you have to be able to tell people to go jump off a bridge and have them asking directions.
Right.
You know,
right.
That's the difficult part.
Yeah, there are a lot of – once the decision does arrive with you and is appropriate for it to be handled by you – the alternatives aren't this is really good here and this is really bad here. It's always something in between, and somebody's going to get really mad whichever decision you make, and you got to have to handle that too.
I have people on staff right now, and they will tell you they're tired of hearing me say this, but I said, folks, any trained monkey could do the job if it was black and white. Mm-hmm. Our success is how we deal with the gray, how we deal with the one that's not quite white but not quite black, but we got to go in the middle, and how can we make that happen? And how can we avoid being in the crosshairs of people of influence that could change our operations in a moment? Our relationship with the General Assembly right now is fabulous. But we have 100 representatives in the House. We have 25 of them that are brand new. So it's a constant turnover in that. We have 40% of our high school athletic directors have changed in the last 2 years, 40%. So when we go to regional meetings and try to do information sessions, we will come out and we'll always go through a couple of times where we go through the list as a staff, say, here's what we're going to talk about. Always have one or two that groan and say, well, we just talked about that last year. And you tell them, well, yeah, you're right, but the audience is different. So we got to do it again. Because the 60% that are still here probably weren't listening last year. And the 40% that are new need an answer. So it's constant. But that's the beauty of it. That's the relationship piece is what is so critical, whether it's making that relationship in the hallways at Frankfurt, making that relationship in the executive branch. Our Department of Education is our partners in this. They've assigned athletics to us, and they – I think they found out in 2020, which whether or not we have time to cover, that's up to you. But okay. I think we found out in 2020 they don't want anything to do with athletics other than making sure we're doing our job. And then you've got our own board who's representing people around the state. You're constantly thinking about relationships and making it work.
Yeah. Well, since you alluded to 2020, of course, everything had to be rethought and redone, and then in the case of the Sweet 16, canceled. And so a nightmare situation for Commissioner of Athletics, and obviously nothing to refer to as far as how did Commissioner so-and-so handle this.
You know, it's interesting because I wouldn't wish another pandemic on anybody, but I hope people took notes of how people handled it so the next people have a chance to say, well, this is how they did it, because we obviously didn't know how somebody handled things 100 years ago. And I can remember sitting on – we've got an elevated platform at the basketball tournament because we need so many rows of press, and our administrative staff is on either end of this second row. And I was sitting with my associate, Commissioner Butch Cope, and we were talking about it. And I had talked to the governor's office twice. I had talked to public health people continually. Since two Fridays before the tournament, we have been talking about it. We've been on a call with the CDC and the people at the Masters and the people at all these other events about what was coming and what it looked like. And this ship that had landed in the Washington area that had this virus on it and how this was going, and starting to make what-if plans. And so we're thinking, all right, what happens if we do this? What happens if we do that? And we've kind of got a battle plan together. And then about Monday of the girls' week, which was the first tournament, it just started changing every hour. And so it's good that you had talked about plans. But I remember sitting there on stage a little after noon on that Thursday afternoon. And I got a call that two of the conference tournaments had canceled and public health was on the phone, and then I got a call from some of the people in state government that were indicating that, look, there's a lot of events we need to cancel, but as long as you're playing, they're not going to cancel. What do you realistically think you want to do? And we talked about it. I talked to our board members. I talked to schools. I talked to our staff. We talked to the arena staff. And the loneliest I have ever been in my life was when I sat there and I hung up a phone talking to the public health folks, and I said, we've got to stop. I told Butch, I said, we've got to cancel. You go talk to the officials. So-and-so is going to go talk to the teams. It was the second half of the first game of the afternoon, and I said, we just can't take the risk. And then I looked back and I said, and you realize it'll be 10 years before we'll know if we were right. Because nobody knows. You know, at that point, we didn't know anything. Naysayers who are out there that don't think there ever really was a virus are probably saying you made a mistake, and yet if you've had people involved maybe that succumbed to it or had bad outcomes, you're going, man, that's all you could do. I hated it for those kids to look at those two teams that were ready to play and watch them be told, it's time to get on the bus. We've got to go. And one of them was from far west Kentucky. And knowing that bus ride they had, that the lack of knowledge that they had, they just didn't know. Mm-hmm. They're 16 years old.
Sure, yeah.
The world, they've got the world by the horns. They're going good. Mm-hmm. But we knew it's absolute loneliest, and the worst 8 weeks of my professional and probably personal life was that next few weeks as we tried to navigate, could we resume? Could we play spring sports? Could we somehow do it? And the data just did not verify that it was going to happen. I watched a couple of states. I remember talking to a friend of mine who's the director in New Mexico, and they went ahead and played their tournament where only the players and referees were in the building. They didn't even let the parents in, and they caught all kinds of flack. We had other people who tried to limit it, you know, one or two people per team. We talked about that. As a matter of fact, we met till after midnight on the Wednesday night of the state tournament as a staff and with some of the arena people. We said, here's our options. And, you know, the big question kept coming up. Let's say we want to limit it. Let's say we want to spread people out because we don't think anybody's been exposed here. But, okay, you tell everybody you get two. How do you pick which two?
Yeah.
How do you going to, dad and mom, you can come, but now stepdad or stepmom and definitely grandma can't be there. And it was not workable in our situation. We're so blessed that our events are different than anything else played all year. It's moms and dads and cousins and grannies. Everybody comes because they want to be on that floor or at that championship. And to know that you had to cancel that was the most daunting responsibility. It's not life or death, but I will say, as a person with a finance background and a math background, to watch a little over $1 million walk out the door because you weren't going to be able to play the boys' tournament, you start worrying about, you got 13 people who might not have a job. You've got, because I mean, as a nonprofit that gets zero state tax dollars, you're always thinking about, you know, what happens. We used to talk about getting a Lloyd's of London insurance policy in case the roof ever fell off our arena, and that was Billy's thing. What if a roof breaks the arena roof down? And we figured out it's the cost of it was about half of what you gross, and you couldn't afford that. If you had 2 years without a tournament, you're broke anyway, you know, because you've spent it all on insurance premium. So it was daunting, but that's why early on we decided to open up. Dr. Stack's office was fantastic dealing with us, and said, "Look, we really want to get this community started back together in athletics. We think it's safe, but we need your help in developing some standards around athletics." And we were at the table, and that was very helpful. The governor's office worked with us. The lieutenant governor was fantastic for us to deal with during that time. She was more of our direct liaison. And we worked out, could we get small groups together? Could we do small groups for a certain time in the summer? Now, we'd already made the spring cancellation, but then in the summer we're going to start letting them get together. What our coaches did a great job of, particularly our football coaches, which were large groups, is collecting data on, did we get any disease spread? Did we have anybody? And we figured out we were one of the early states that figured out that we were probably okay if we could contain the groups together, because you needed an outside influence to spread the virus. You had to have somebody that had it, because inside it wasn't going to happen. Where we did see any outbreaks was generally if we had somebody who went to a bonfire, went to a party, went to somewhere with a group that was not controlled. But I'm telling you, the data they collected in football and some other sports was instrumental in us deciding. And I told our board before our summer board meeting, they asked me, what are you going to recommend? I said, we're playing. I don't know if we'll be able to play on time, but we're playing because we have found a safe way. And our board got behind it. Our board stood behind it and said, we're not playing. This continuing to shut down 17-year-olds was already – we were already talking to other states where the mental issues were coming up. The isolation of 15 to 17-year-olds, the fact that they – the lack of involvement, not to mention what it did to their physical conditioning, sedentariness, et cetera, because, you know, that group's already accused of sitting around playing video games all day. Now, our group didn't, but a lot, they're accused of that. So we were trying to put a jigsaw puzzle together in August, decided to play, weathered a little bit of a storm from some administrative groups that said, well, maybe you shouldn't. I'll never forget it was a Friday afternoon that summer in August when we had made the decision we were going to play. And another board said, well, we're going to see if we really want that to happen. And we reminded them, you know, that's really our call. We're liable. We're on the hook. But there were some people that wanted to influence them. So the Department of Education, that gets a couple hundred calls a day in their main headquarters, got 14,000 phone calls that afternoon.
Wow.
They monitored it through their IP-based phone system. And that's when I think some of the people at our friends at the Department of Ed said, okay, look, we don't want anything to do with sports. That's fine. We'll worry about the classroom. You all just please keep us informed. And we've been partners. It never was an adversarial thing. But they decided, yeah, this is bigger than maybe some people thought. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can remember the governor's office sending word that, look, we don't think we should play, but we're not going to get involved. We need you to lead and make that call, your association. And so we were able to get going. And I look back now at some states. I think the state of Illinois was more than a year without playing. Hawaii was a better part of a year and a half. And I watch what happens to the data points that are coming out of there, not just education loss, but society interaction loss. Interaction, you know, those kids that lost that development of skills. You know, you and I have been on a softball field together. You know, your life's lessons are learned when you're in competition. Mm-hmm. And you realize, well, I wasn't as good as I thought I was, or I'm better than I thought I was. You learn those lessons. And when they didn't have that for a year, year and a half, I don't feel quite as bad about the people that lost 3 months. But that 3 months is not replaceable. I mean, those seniors in 2020, they paid athletically, they paid the biggest price.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can recall driving through neighborhoods and people would put up signs in their yard that their senior was graduating, and so they lost that experience. And for us who are much older, it's 1 year out of our lives. We missed a lot, of course, but to think about it being that unique period in your life when you're a high school junior or senior and getting to play in a big sports event, that's gone.
Well, and you remember that year. I mean, all of a sudden, you talk about the tattletale people out there, but they're reporting each other for having a graduation party or something, or so-and-so had a gathering more than 20 in the limit. And then we started getting into people questioning everything because – and the data we got nationally was inconsistent at best. We actually had pretty good local data and local support. I mean, I'm talking about in Kentucky. People will never know how good the interaction and communication was. But nationally, you know, 15 is good if you're doing this, but 20 is good if you're doing this, but only 8 if you're doing this. And, you know, I can remember somebody saying, it's a good thing you played because they told me that we couldn't have more than 8 at a restaurant, but we had to have our mask on except when we were eating. And he said, I don't know how you eat, but I eat with my mouth open. And he said, I'm not really sure how that helped. And people began to doubt. But we were blessed. We were given an opportunity to try some things, to test some things, to data point some things, and got support on what we were doing. And then 2021 was a little odd, but it certainly wasn't the spring of 20. And then I told everybody there was a point in time in the spring of 21, somebody said, when did it feel normal? And I said, when the call started coming in that so-and-so's cheating instead of what's the virus mitigation, I said, we're starting to get back to normal when they're starting to report each other cheating.
Yeah, and it sounds like, of course, you had to balance things. I mean, obviously, we were in an emergency situation there in 2020, and even though you know you're taking away a very special event in a young person's life, at the same time, it was a public good kind of thing, and you had to react to it.
Well, and what do you do? How do you respond? I mean, I know of a personal situation. I know of an athlete in the mountains of Eastern Kentucky that's a friend of our family's. And, you know, she ends up going to Florida to play in a travel tournament during that shutdown time because they were kind of unregulated. She comes back with COVID. Her grandmother in the house gets infected and dies. Now, how do you live with that? And that's what we kept saying is it's really not just about the athletes because you're not going to be able to have the athletes there without their parents. I don't ever want to try to propose any rule that keeps a parent away from their kid. So it is a delicate balance. You're trying to do the greater good. You know everybody's watching. Just like the very first phone call in March, it says, look, until you shut down, this play's not shutting down. This show's not shutting down. And so I get that, and that's what made the wedge. You know, I jokingly tell everybody my hair was still real jet brown in February of 20, and now it's white. But I think heredity has more to do with that than COVID. But it's a daunting time. I remember Representative Steve Riley sent me the a quote that I'd seen when I was in high school and college, but the whole Teddy Roosevelt speech about the man in the ring, you know, and you really, until you're that person, you really don't understand. I don't want to go through that again. I don't wish it on anybody. I hope the next person that comes into our office, the worst thing they have to worry about is people are complaining about prices at RUP or they're complaining about they should be 2A instead of 3A in football. I mean, something like that. Let's make it athletics. Let's hope nobody has to go through that.
Well, you have a wide-ranging program, and as you said, when you first came on board as commissioner, you proposed other sport activities, but the Sweet 16 continues to lead the way as far as what you have to watch over. What's your feeling about where the Sweet 16 boys and girls is right now?
You know, we moved. We had an interesting group of things happen with the Sweet 16. We moved the girls' tournament. I had worked with the folks at the Lexington Center Corporation for I don't know how many years, trying to find a way. It doesn't generate the gross revenue that the boys does. And unfortunately, Carl Hall, who's a longtime operations guy at RUP, always tells me that, you know, even the smallest event at RUP, he's still got 18 doors to secure. So you still got – there's a certain amount of manpower, a certain amount of things to heat and air. It doesn't matter. They're not going to be a cheap venue. But we made the commitment. We said, we're going to try it. We're going to do the girls. And it was unfortunate that that occurred the year before COVID because then they had to encounter 2 years of COVID. So we've got a little pressure from people back, you know, a little while ago that said, wait a minute, the girls is we can't make it work. We can't even pay our own staff with the girls at these attendance numbers. And we talked to them. We said, can you just give us 22? And now 22 went so well that we've re-upped for another 3 years, and we hope to remain there for a few years. Getting our boys and girls both the same experience is key. You know, we don't have a really good alternative. You know, you all are in the Lexington area. You know what this city desperately needs is a 5,000 to 6,000 seat venue. Small concerts, bigger than maybe, as to use specific names, bigger than the Opera House, smaller than RUP, you know, that you can do. That would be ideal for so many events. The Horse Park venue is beautiful, but it was built for horses. That's why it has a dirt surface. It's built for, you know, it's just not the same. So we have tried to take RUP for the girls and make it smaller with curtaining off the upstairs, and certainly their renovations make it a gorgeous place. But we'll have to evaluate that in the future as universities, whether it's UK renovates Memorial Coliseum or Eastern renovates their facility or other facilities come online. Right now, it appears our schools like where we are with that. But that is, those two events are just a little shy of 50% of our nonprofit's budget. And so it's not all about money, but I did find out one important thing when I took this job. I kind of ran our operations around the office for a couple of decades. I kind of knew where all the bodies were buried as far as how the office itself operated. I didn't know the commissioner's number one job was to make sure we're open tomorrow. And that makes you protect your big events, the basketball tournaments, the football finals. You have to be very careful. So coming off COVID, we've been blessed. We were able to enter into a new agreement with the management company at the Lexington Center, fantastic, with Central Bank Center, and Kroger Field has come on board as an opportunity for us to hold football. So we've been able to stabilize some things. And that's not to say those will be permanent, but our kids sure seem to enjoy it right now. And I think as long as we ride that wave, let's ride that wave.
Well, let me ask you a final question then about you have to envision what you want the KHSAA to look like. That's part of the commissioner's job, is to look ahead while handling the current problems. But as you look ahead for the next year or two, what would you like to see happen? What's at the top of the list?
Well, I think there's a couple of things that are really interesting. We take a survey every 3 years of our schools, and we ask them, are there programs that are offered in other places that we need to add as a championship? If you would have, as Billy used to say, if you would have bet me a Coke in the kitchen, I would have said there's no way that our schools want to add anything coming off COVID. I could not have guessed incorrectly by a wider margin. There's a push, and they have enough schools to get us a really strong look at lacrosse for both genders. There are already enough schools to look at pushing a boys volleyball championship, a girls wrestling championship, an indoor track championship. And then there's a couple of other things that have come online that we've got to do some partly soul searching and partly regulation searching. You know, we have a large part of our area where hunting and sporting is very, very big in our state. And there's a push for trap shooting kind of things, or rifle marksmanship things. And those sound really good in those areas. But I'm also, and this is where I have to just take some bullets from people, no pun intended. You know, it's hard for me to reconcile a public school having a shooting sport while they're also sending their teachers to safety training about active shooters. And so we're having that conversation with our schools now. They need to help make that decision. And I think you'll see other things. So I think our goal, the immediate goal, can be a long-term and immediate at the same time, and that is to try to be sure there's something for every student. We have found with the addition of the activities, and after those first four, we've added dance and we've now added esports. If you would have told me when we were on the softball field together at Shillitoe Park years ago that someday people would actually pay money to watch people play video games against each other, I would have laughed you off the field. You wouldn't be able to get back to third base. And I was like, no, that's they want that. These kids want that. Well, now we're seeing those fishing teams, those archery teams, those esports teams, all these activities. They're wearing the school letter jackets, and they're showing up with pride. Their attendance has improved. We hear that all over the state, that having to meet the standards that athletes and competitors have to meet has been fantastic. We've been blessed during this period of COVID. We've also developed a much stronger relationship with the Kentucky Music Educators because we worked with them on their resumption of band. And music, and really helped work with them and worked with our national office on that. So we think we're coming out stronger than ever, but it's going to go back to the old expression that to whom much is given, much is expected, because I think that we're not going to be able – whoever comes in behind me and me until I'm gone are going to be held to a much higher level than maybe we were – we might have had a little more forgiveness in 2019 that we won't have now, because they've said you've proven you can do – you all can do extraordinary. Now that needs to become the ordinary. You know, we not go down to the ordinary, but the extra needs to become ordinary. So it's going to be a continual challenge, but it's an exciting challenge. It's a place that not everybody's cut out to work. It's a work pace that not everybody can keep. But we're blessed with a fantastic staff and a lot. You know, we only have – people don't understand, Keith. We have a staff of 13, and that includes a 70-some-year-old janitor. So we're not blessed with a whole bunch of people. But, gosh, do we have people come out of the woodwork to help with our events. And you go to these events, and you'd think that person works for us because you see them at every one. We've got a cadre of about 60 or 80 that just want to work everything. And I just hope when we expand that people are patient, but I don't want them to lower the bar. I want them to hold us to that accountability. This is not of your standard. Real quickly, we had a situation last year at one of our golf tournaments. We wanted to advance more people from the region to the state, but we also knew that playing in October, you can only have so many people or it's going to get dark on you. So we created a round in the middle, all excitement around. Two of those sites were fantastic. The third site may not have put its best foot forward. And the feedback we got was not about the change. It was not about that it was watered down. It was about, well, the one site really didn't feel like the kid experience. And I am thankful for that. I want people to hold us to that standard that the kid experience is what matters. The 45-year-old that's living vicariously through his kid, I'm not really going to prioritize whether or not he's happy. I'm just not going to. But if that 17-year-old comes out of there and says, man, thanks for doing this. We really appreciate y'all doing it. And so many do. We'll keep doing what we're doing.
All right. Well, best of luck with that. I know out there a few years, maybe you'll attend some ball games as a retiree where you actually get to watch. That's the difference. You go to a lot of events, but you don't get to watch now.
Well, and my wife tells me all the time that maybe when we go to games when I'm retired, I'll actually be able to show emotion because you have to be Spock-like in this position. Mm-hmm. You can't even give the slightest little nudge or nod or somebody says, well, that's who they're in favor of. And you just kind of sit there. She says you'll be able to finally let all that out.
Well, best of luck until that time. And, of course, after that time, too. Julian, thanks for doing this today.
All right. Thanks, Lucky.
Okay.
You've been listening to The Sports Page with Keith Elkins, an exclusive podcast from 91.3 WUKY produced by Alan Lytle. Our theme music is Peanut Butter and Jam by Illogical Bit, available at soundcloud.com/illogicalbit. Subscribe to The Sports Page through Google Play or at our website, WUKY.org.